Shauna, like I said, I'm very excited to have her here. She was a creative director at a very large agency working on some very large projects. And she's going to talk about how lack of opportunity fueled her entrepreneurship journey. And I think any of us that are entrepreneurs can probably relate to that, probably after she tells her story even more so. And beyond that, she's on the board of directors for the Women's Founder Network, which she'll talk about a little bit about. But please welcome to the stage, Shauna Bigby.
Hello. Good morning, Pasadena. Good morning. I'm so happy to hear that there are so many entrepreneurs in this room. Wedding industry, $8.5 billion industry per year. Fantastic. Good for you. All right. So how lack of opportunity fuels entrepreneurship. A little bit about me. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a former agency owner. So I have actually exited my agency, but for 5.5 years, I was a co-founder and executive creative director. An executive creative director is somebody who comes up with the ideas, the designs, the communications for advertising. And then I'm shifting focus. Currently, I'm a autoimmune vigilante. And so I am seeking out A-type women, such like myself, and I'm giving them tools in order to understand that they have autoimmune issues. I'm also a Women Founders Network board member, and I'll talk a little bit about that at the very end. All cyclical, ties together. So I want to take you on a little journey, though, to 1984, and I'm so happy to see here a lot of people who look like me. Fantastic. So you will remember 1984. And 1984 was the best entrepreneurial movie of all time. And I know that you're thinking of it already. Karate Kid. Karate Kid is absolutely, hands down in my mind, something that spurred a revolution. I walked out of that theater wanting, needing, absolutely dying to know karate. I had to know karate. I was a woman, and I still wanted to know karate. Let's go to Danny. Danny's the new kid in town. He's poor. He's a minority. He has no business winning anything. He is the American dream wrapped up in a gawky teenage boy. The American dream is this. He's willing to stand on one foot. He's willing to put his arms in the air. He's beaten. He's bruised. He's bleeding. He's unafraid of his opponent because he's got his secret weapon. Wax on, wax off. He's willing to stand on one foot, looking a fool in order to deliver this kick. And what does he do? He kicks the smug white guy's ass. This is the American dream. This is everything every entrepreneur wants. We could all be Karate Kid in that moment. And that, to me, was inspiring, exciting, and so it was for the rest of America also. Dojos all over America have sprung up. Everybody wants to learn the fabled crane move. Kids in school had to be broken up because they were constantly doing the crane kick to one another, giving each other bloody noses. Karate is now banned across most elementary schools, thanks to Karate Kid. And just recently, not so recently, was this 5 years ago, The Social Network comes out. And when I walked out of The Social Network, I had that same feeling I did when I walked out of Karate Kid. I was like, I can do anything. By the way, I was already an entrepreneur. I already owned my own business. But I still felt like I could do anything. I was invincible. I wanted to own a multi-billion dollar company. Absolutely. And I thought, wow, I wonder if this is going to fuel other people the same way that Karate Kid did. Did Karate Kid made everybody want to learn karate? They wanted to earn their black belt. They wanted to kick that guy's ass. They wanted to stand up for themselves. And I thought, well, here's a nerdy white guy, privileged, but a nerdy white guy who is basically building a billion-dollar empire. And I thought, I wonder if other people are going to be doing the same thing, if they're going to be excited. Silicon Valley. How many of you guys watch Silicon Valley? Okay, this, I had to stop watching for a while because it was too real. I was like, oh, I'm too close to home, getting me a little bit sick. Unicorns are the new inspiration for us, right? So it used to be, getting my black belt. Now unicorns are. But there's so many unicorns now, I don't even know why they call them unicorns. There's a herd. So there's a lot of really great tools out there for us right now. And because of that, you're starting to see, check your Instagram, check your Twitter, hashtag gig economy, hashtag side hustle, hashtag entrepreneur life. These accompany everything. I have a lot of friends, and they're stay-at-home moms, and they really, really want a side hustle. They really want something for themselves. They're selling jeggings. They're selling makeup. They're selling anything they can, and they feel like they are part of this. So gig economy is important, right? Gig economy, these side hustles. A lot of times we have corporate jobs and we work that side hustle. We work it until someday it tips and we can leave that corporate job. However, we're seeing again and again that the statistics don't match this. If you have a gig economy, if you have a side hustle, if you hashtag entrepreneur life but don't give it everything you've got, it doesn't pan out. Not so often. It is my theory that entrepreneur is the new superhero. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur today. Why? Because it's the American dream. This is something that you can actually obtain. I don't know how to fly. I can't get the skills to fly. I can get the skills maybe to become an entrepreneur. So let's just take a moment. What is an entrepreneur? This is a person who identifies a need. They see something out in the world, something that isn't being done, and they know how to fill it, right? So they start a business to fill that void. There are four types of entrepreneurship, and I'm sure that we could like dissect these a little bit more, but really there's four types. There's your small business. These are the guys who are basically eking out a living. It's a guy and a dog. These are your locksmiths, your hairdressers. Maybe there's a travel agent in there. But basically, they're plumbers. They're people who have taken on jobs in order to provide them and their families a life. They're scalable startups. Silicon Valley loves a scalable startup. And that's what everybody is trying to achieve when they say this social entrepreneurship, or they say hashtag entrepreneur life. What they're trying to do is create a scalable business, something that's repeatable, and they're trying to get investors in order to make that happen. A lot of times that can't happen by itself. There's large companies. These are entities that already exist. They're enormous, and they're like the Titanic. They don't move very fast. And so what happens is they go off, and they usually swallow up the scalable startups, because the scalable startups are where we see lots and lots of innovation. That's where we see bright ideas. That's where we see exciting things come to fruition. And then we've got social people who are creating problems that solve needs and create not-for-profits. I bet you some of you in here maybe fall into one of these. As a kid, I didn't grow up so privileged. So my dad was a farrier. And that means that he used to shoe horses. My mom was a waitress. We were not rolling in it. So I also saw pretty quickly the haves and have nots. And I realized that I was not part of the haves. I was part of the have nots. And I also recognized that I could draw. And I could draw really well. And people wanted my drawings. And so I would sell them for 25 cents a piece. Early entrepreneur. I could crank out the bears the quickest. So I would draw lots and lots of bears at night, and they would pay me a quarter, and they'd stick them into their slick envelopes, or what do you call those folders. Thank you, malware. From there, once I got up enough dollars, I asked my mom to take me to Smart Vinyl. I bought a box of candy, and I asked her, how much do you think I could sell this for? 50 cents, a dollar a piece? She said, try it. I came home with 20 bucks. Now I had an opportunity to buy new shoes. I was very excited. So then I would save enough money to buy more pencils, more paper, more candy bars. This continued for many, many years. This is basically how I fueled my childhood. Uh-oh. What happened? There we go. So 86% of people, 86% of entrepreneurs, they identify an opportunity for themselves. They identify something that's there for them. This number is very, very misleading, though, because there's push and pull dynamics in this. Push is lack of opportunity, necessity, need. Pull, I'm drawing to a new venture, an innovation. I have an idea that I think is going to solve a problem that's really significant in this world, something that nobody else is thinking about, and I think I can do it. I think I'm the person to do it. The minority groups tend to feel the push. And what do they feel the push because, and this is about 50%, by the way. So 50% of entrepreneurs, they feel the push because of how old they are, if they are a woman, what is their race here in America, very important, social class, where do you sit on that socioeconomical scale, what is your education level, and then do you have home responsibilities? As a woman, I have home responsibilities. Maybe as a mother, you have home responsibilities. Maybe as somebody who's caring for ailing parents, you have home responsibilities. These are things that you have to take into consideration. The minorities feel that they have no other option except for to go into entrepreneurship. That's pretty incredible. Women, we feel both the push and the pull. Statistically, when we ask women, why did you get into being an entrepreneur? It's split. They say both the push and the pull. Lack of opportunity, need to create. So this is where I come in. Good enough is not enough. This was the motto of the agency that I worked at. I worked at a very large multinational agency. It's called Chiat Day. It's located here in Los Angeles. And I was part of the creative department. In the creative department, I was one of 3%. 3% of the creative department is women. So while you look at the majority of an advertising or marketing agency, it's well over 50%. Women are in supporting roles making less than $20,000 a year. Good enough is not enough is the motto we lived by. Our mascot was a pirate. We were ruthless. We were ruthless with ourselves. We were ruthless with the work that we created. Minimum 80 hours a week. Entrepreneurs, I know you guys are like, I sweat that. That's nothing. So something pretty incredible happened here, though. I worked here for a decade, and I got this amazing opportunity. But it didn't come in the form of an opportunity. It came in the form of a teeny tiny little assignment. One of my creative directors came to me and said, they're making this new car. They don't have a name yet. The designers in Japan are stuck. Can you just make a poster? And we're going to send it over to them. And it's just going to be some inspiration, some fodder, so they can start thinking of some new names. You got a week. I got the assignment on a Wednesday. The next day was going to be Thanksgiving. And then I was supposed to come back with my poster on Monday. So I was assigned a writer. So we work in teams, copywriter, designer. And we went off for a couple hours. And we said, you know what? Because good enough is not enough. We skipped Thanksgiving that year. And we got together and we said, you don't need a poster. You need a revolution. And we came back with a giant binder. We said, this is what you need. This is what this car deserves. This is a fully electric car. Mass market has never seen this before. And we have the plan to bring it to market. And they said, fantastic, you, and you, you're the team, go off and work on this. So now, there's three of us, I'm one of three, and I have the opportunity to do so much on this car. I had the opportunity to design the sound. So when you turn on the car, my partner and I designed that. When you turn off the car, when you touch the interior, all of the gauges are basically brain children of mine. This car was absolutely everything to me. And I worked on this project for 3 years straight. in and out, this car was mine. Inside, outside, the car color, how we were going to bring it to mass market, how we were going to engage an audience with a teeny tiny little budget because they really truly didn't believe in electric cars. How were we going to bring this and then sell the projected 200,000 cars that they wanted in that first year? Also, it was 2008 and we had just hit a recession. This was the opportunity that when I saw it, I thought, I have to hold on tight to this because I don't know if this opportunity is going to come my way again. This is incredible. And I got an opportunity to change everything about how I worked. There was a chance for me to now work in strategy. There was a chance for me to work on product design. There was a chance for me to work in guerrilla marketing. We went all around the United States and we filmed the very hardcore nerds who loved this kind of car, who were interested and they wanted to talk about it. We created an entire ecosystem of how we were going to push this forward. Through all those learning curves, as we were coming off the tail end of this project, I took a look around and they started to put me on the next project. And that next project looked a lot like the projects I'd worked on before. Pardon. That project, the next project looked like create a poster, create a TV commercial, do some ad copy, make some pretty pictures. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. No. I got to do all sorts of other cool stuff. Like, wait, where's that opportunity? And that wasn't going to be given to me again. So I thought maybe I could push it and I can pull it and I can make it mine. But that's not going to be there. And so realizing that I could make my own opportunity, I did. I also happened to be 9 months pregnant. Looking at my future and saying, oh, I don't know if I can travel 3 times a month, and I don't think that I can work 80 hours a week with a small child. This is my push and my pull. As a woman, I wanted to innovate. I wanted to create. I wanted to make new things. But also, I was making a baby. I needed to provide for that baby. So when you create the life you want, not the one handed to you, what does that look like? Oh, I'm going to skip ahead, you guys. So I started an agency. I was co-founded it with my partner, and we started a design advertising agency because that's what I knew, right? And in that design and advertising agency model, I said there are no silos. Everybody gets to work on everything. Everybody gets to do whatever they want to do, which ultimately doesn't work out. There's a reason why we silo people. But this is what fueled me. This is what fueled me to create something, bigger than me. And within 2 years, we had 14 employees. Within 3 years, we had 25 employees. And that brings me to this. When we first got started, we needed desks, desperately needed desks. We were on fold-out chairs from Target because they were in the dollar bin. We had some old tables in the corner that we were using. They're the kinds that you use at picnics. We sat on those. My iPhone hotspot was our internet for 3 months. We bootstrapped this. I tried desperately to get some funding. It was very difficult. My partner was an immigrant, and our company was sponsoring the visa. I am a woman. Women only get 2% of funding. This is VC funding, not small business loans. However, when we apply for small business loans, women also only get 45% of what male counterparts get. And my immigrant partner was not getting anything. So again, lack of innovation. I'm sorry, lack of opportunity. How does that fuel innovation? That makes you gritty, friend. That makes you very gritty. And it makes you seize any and all opportunity. And this is what we're seeing again and again with minorities. This is what we're seeing with women. We spin straw into gold because we are pushed up against the wall. Entrepreneurs need to be pushed up against the wall. You need to not feel comfortable. You need to feel like, this is it. This is your last break effort. And so if you are an entrepreneur and you're on this side of the corporate side and you've got your hashtag side hustle, what will it take for you to jump all the way over and into that? That's when your back is up against the wall. That's when you seek any and all and seize any and all opportunity. I'm going to go to a fun fact. 4 years after Karate Kid, by the way, women no longer need man as a co-signer for a loan. This is not like, I'm sorry guys, this is not a typo. This is not an 1888. This is 1988. Finally, we can go in and get a loan by ourselves. Woo! It's very exciting, huh? 30 years ago. So I'm going to leave you with a couple of facts. 39% of all businesses, that's 12.3 million businesses, are women-owned. And I'm not going to get into the minority story. There's maybe one or two facts that I've sprinkled in here. But the minority story is even bleaker. 12% of all sales that generate here in the United States come from a women-owned business. We make up 15%, 9%, I'm sorry, 9 million people are employed by women-owned businesses. We generate $1.7 trillion in sales, $264 billion in payroll. It's phenomenal, right? However, 99.9% are considered small businesses, and only 88 make less than $100,000 a year. And the reason why is because most women-owned businesses are selling jeggings, selling makeup, home care, foster care. So this is pretty incredible. However, this is our back up against the wall. This is exciting times, because this is when we get gritty. In terms of minority, 1 in 3 people in this country is a minority. That's phenomenal. 1 in 3 people. 4 million minority-owned businesses. That number should be much, much bigger. However, they tend to move into downstream. They move into blue-collar, right? So what we need to do is create opportunity for minorities to come up and join the white-collar race. Race? My goodness. $591 billion in annual revenues, and they've created 4.7 million jobs. It's fantastic. So I'm going to ask you today, on your journey, when you look around and you see, do you have affluence? Do you have something to support? Do you have something that you can give? Are you in a place where you want to contribute? And if you are, I highly, highly suggest that you come on over. It's a shameless plug for me and Women Founders Network. WomenFoundersNetwork.com. It's an entity where we help women founders get capital, mentorship, entrepreneurship, guidance. But it doesn't have to be Women Founders Network. Reach out. Become a mentor. Like, what are you super smart at? What are you really, really passionate at? What are you great at? What can you teach somebody else? Can you offer cash sponsorship? And we're not talking like tens of thousands of dollars. We're talking small amounts of money. Can you offer that? Can you advocate for change with some of the knowledge that you've learned today, or you go out and you learn some of your own knowledge? Can you now use that to be an advocate for change? And then can you vote with your wallet? Inc. magazine last week published an article, the 100 most influential women in the United States. This is an incredible group of women who have budding businesses to multi-billion dollar empires. Vote with your wallet. Go there. See who's there and see how you can support them. And then my last, how much time I got? Am I good? Okay. My last call to action for you guys is, please write a movie. It's as good as Karate Kid. I want to walk out of my next movie experience feeling like I can take on the world. I want to feel like I could do that next great big thing. I have built a business. I have sold a business. I've built two more since then. And I love it. I love the extreme highs and lows, and I love all the little pitfalls that come along with it. And I wouldn't give it up for anything. And I truly believe that you do too, otherwise you wouldn't be in this room today. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna. That was very inspirational. You're a very inspirational person. Very happy to have you here presenting. I'm going to open it up to Q&A. I'm going to give the microphone to John. If you have a question, we'd love to hear it. This is a great time to hear questions for Shauna, not a great time to tell your story of how you became an entrepreneur and how your back was up against the wall. Let's save that for offline. So here's the microphone, John.
I go first.
Oh, sure.
I know. Can you tell me a little bit about your fast pitch competition?
Yes. So, hello. Hi. So Women Founders Network, we hold an annual fast pitch competition where we invite women to apply. It's open for 2 months. So we started in April looking for applications. It closes at June 1st. Women apply. And what we do is choose the top 10. And then we put them through a virtual accelerator. We give mentors. We give coaches. And we poke holes in business plans. And we basically shape up something to be created. Something that is pitch perfect so that these women can go out and raise their own money. In the fast pitch competition on the final day, you get an opportunity to pitch to judges and investors in the room. And with that, there are cash prizes and $150,000 in professional services that are granted to you. It's our seventh year, so in 6 years, the women who graduate from this program have gone on to raise $68 million. So they've come in as early, yes, exactly. So they've come in as very early stage ideas, and they've walked out with great investment.
And guys can be part of these companies, right?
Yes. So on the Women Founders Network, you'll see all of the, for the fast pitch competition specifically, right, John? Uh-huh. So fast pitch competition, you need to be a woman, 50% owner. So if you have a partnership, you're still eligible.
Can you give us some examples of companies that you worked with through the Women's Business or Founders Network?
Yeah, absolutely. So last year, our winner was T-Drops. So Sashi Chandran of T-Drops, and just recently she has acquired $2 million in funding since leaving our program. And she started a ground tea that is dissolvable in water, very like Instagrammable, super cute, like lots of little fun shapes. Michelle Obama has called it her favorite thing. It's been in Oprah's favorite things. And we've also had rideshare services, I think, from here, Hipscop Drive. Do you guys know them? They've also been through the program a few years ago. We've had everything from edible cookie dough to technology services. So the field is wide open for who can participate. There are no no's.
Any questions? When the how long or the Women's Founders Network? How long have you been involved with that, and how did you get drawn into that network?
Yeah, so I had my marketing and advertising agency, and I needed actually some advice, and so I sought out a couple of women. And after getting my advice, they said, "Will you please go talk to Daria, who is the founder for Women Founders Network?" So I called her up and she said, "What do you know about Facebook ads and how do I get some out?" and I said, "Okay, great. Give me 20 minutes. I whipped up something. I threw it out there. And while I did that, she invited me. She said, "Well, why don't you come out and see what we're doing?" And when I heard the statistic that women are only getting 2% of funding, and I had felt it myself, I was realizing that I needed to be involved immediately. And so I've been involved for a year and a quarter now, and I'm helping with marketing initiatives. And I also am going to be working with some of the women who are coming through who need some marketing.
Now, the agency that you talked about that you started with a partner, is that one of your exits?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and the question is, why did you decide to exit on that? It sounds like you were doing well and successful.
Yeah.
What was the decision?
Yeah, so that was it's an excellent business. It's still in business. I sold it to my partner. We were profitable from the beginning, and it's a labor of love. And I'll be very, very truthful here. I got very sick. I got very, very ill, and I was in a steady decline from like 2006 until 2017. I kept getting more and more ill. And ultimately, I figured out that I had multiple autoimmune diseases, and they were self-imposed, friends. I gave them to myself. Gave them to myself because I worked myself to the bone. So what I needed to do is to make some lifestyle changes. And so I sold my business to my partner. It still exists today. The agency is called All Boats Rise, and it was all about the idea that high tides lift all boats. If we all work together, we can create a sea change. And so in my heart and soul, that's who I still am, and that's what I want to create every day. However, I'm not doing it with marketing. I'm doing it with my know-how, and I'm doing it for looking at you women. Women are the biggest sufferers of autoimmune issues.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Two questions, if you don't mind. The first is, what was the name of the car that you were working on?
It's called the Nissan Leaf.
Told you.
There you go. Your story is really great. I love hearing about that push-pull. I've got kids, and I'm simply not willing to work the 80-hour life. I'm curious about how you were able to balance your life with a young child and grow all of these successful initiatives.
Yeah, so when I left Shiat, I took a year off to be with my child, and I thought, at first it was just going to be a few months, and again, I'm going to be very vulnerable with you. I hit very, very deep depression. Looking back on it, it was autoimmune related. However, it was also because I was not getting a cookie at the end of doing something. Like, I would change a diaper and like nobody would say that looked awesome. Like my kid would scream and I'm like, I'm doing everything. I'm working so hard and you don't appreciate it. And I realized that because I had a baby late in life, so much of my personality and so much of my self-worth was wrapped up in my definition of what success was. And that meant working at this ad agency. So I took a year off. And in that time, after that year, I thought, okay, well, I can go back to work and work 80 hours a week, or I can pave my own way. And that's what I decided to do. She was 1 year old. And this is true of, you can go and do all the research. Entrepreneurs are optimistic to a fault. I really thought that I could do it all. And you can't. There's no such thing as 100% in each thing. So when you spin one plate, the other one wobbles, and you just got to go back and forth. Honestly, I the first couple years were a blur for me because there was very little sleeping. I had help. I had a lot of help. I hired a nanny. Instacart had just come out. Like, TaskRabbit, all the things. And so anything that was at my resource is what I used. And then also, that was actually the spur. When you talk about like back up against the wall, that was the spur for getting employees very early. Is because if I could offload some of my tasks to somebody else, then maybe I could be out there selling more, or maybe I could be out there talking to clients more, generating more income. And as soon as we got employees, our revenue went up, which is counterintuitive in my mind, right? Like if I'm paying money out, that's money out the door, and it's not money I'm keeping. However, somebody who makes considerably less in an administrative spot, frees me up.
Hi, I'm Selena. Thank you. I really like the push-pull, too. That's a lot of food for thought. Do you have any particular comments on making a transition from the corporate environment into entrepreneurship?
Yes. So there was a couple of things that I really took for granted working at a corporate job. HR is one of them. This HR is this invisible thing that happens over here, but they make sure that you get paid, and they make sure that you've got health benefits, and they make sure that if you have employee gripes, like everything's being taken care of. When you move into being an entrepreneur, that is now all your responsibility. Those are all the hats that you are going to wear. So that was unexpected. The other thing is I went into this industry because I loved advertising. I loved design. I loved communication. And I did about 1% of that. My job was to manage the books, manage people, make sure that we had snacks, fix the plumbing. I literally had waiters at school at work because our toilets were constantly breaking, and I'm fairly handy. We had a sump pump. I took apart that sump pump probably 50 times, put it back together again. Right? These are the things about entrepreneurship that you just don't realize. You're like, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to do this one thing, and it's going to be phenomenal. But you do all the other things.
Over here. Hi, thanks for your presentation. As an entrepreneur who has a focus on a particular thing that I do, I find that as a person who doesn't have any employees and has all of those other things to do, you know, at what point do you say to yourself, like, why am I doing all of these other things, 90% of my time doing these other things to do this one thing 10% of the time, you know? And it's, how do you deal with that and balance that sort of a thing and feeling like, you know, I got into this thing and I'm doing all this work to do this thing, but this thing that I got in doing all this work to do is happening a minimum amount of the time. And I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs experience that.
Yeah, and I think that that's lack of priority. And I'm not projecting. This is a thing for me. Lack of priority would often get in my way. I would happily take apart that sump pump before I went and did all the other stuff that would actually make me money, because that was harder. The sump pump was easy, right? And so if you prioritize your day and you prioritize what you're doing and you really stretch yourself, you put your back up against the wall and you say, you know what, maybe I can afford a $15 an hour assistant and like shovel some stuff over to them. It's going to be very painful in the very beginning because you have to train somebody. You have to teach them like what you like, what you don't like, but you have to have help. And if you don't get help, then you can't ever really make that next step. If you can make that next step, but it's going to be very, very challenging. And my suggestion to you is to like beg, borrow, and steal so you can get a little bit of help. And prioritize the really tricky stuff to go up front.
Thank you. It's so great to hear you talk about women and all of the challenges that women face. With a lot of the women that I've worked with, safety and security gets in the way of really taking that leap of faith in being an entrepreneur. Can you speak to that and how women can overcome that?
Yeah, so some can't. Let's be honest. Not everybody's cut out to be an entrepreneur. It flies in the face of convention for us to be entrepreneurs. Our job is to stay safe, is to run to the cave. We've like left the savannah and things are running after us. We go into the cave. Our job now is to stay in here for the rest of the night and be safe, right? Only creep out a little bit and go get some berries. Entrepreneurship is the same. We are leaving the creature comforts. We're leaving the regular paychecks. We're leaving the HR benefits, right? That's not going to be for everybody. And you have to do some soul searching to see if it is going to be comfortable for you. But ultimately, if it is for you, you got to think about that push-pull dynamic, right? So do I see opportunity for me somewhere else? Maybe think about that, right? Like, I don't know if they can... Journaling has been coming up. I don't know if you guys have been reading about journaling, but people are talking about how like it unlocks things inside of our brain as soon as you journal. So maybe it's like suggesting that they journal for a little bit and saying, these are all the benefits that I'm going to get if I become an entrepreneur and I take something into my own hands. And maybe those benefits outweigh the feeling of security. It's going to be different for everybody, though.
Thank you, Sean. One quick question. Not when you started your agency, but as you were a couple years in, what were some of the big challenges that you saw, the biggest challenges?
Oh, people. Okay, so once we were moving it, so we initially started our business and we were focusing on small and medium-sized businesses. We saw an opportunity there where they're like, nobody is working with small and medium-sized businesses. Like, that's where we're going to go. And then halfway in, we were like, now we know why people are not focusing on medium-sized businesses. There's a lot of education that needs to happen. There's $0. You have to be innovative all the time. It's exhausting. So once we made a little bit of course correction, we started getting larger revenue clients. We fought hard with all of our clients to get on retainer. Retainers are the key to your success, because it gives you that sense of security. It gives you that sense of, I know what's coming in down the pike, you know, for these months. Even if it's a 3-month retainer, 6-month, 1-year retainer, you understand and you can budget. So retainers are really important. The really, really challenging thing after you get the retainer in place is dealing with 24 different personalities. Everybody's needs and wants are different. Everybody's has a different level of sensitivity to whatever it is. And so just constantly navigating and mentoring and becoming... Actually, to be honest, I think that that is what is spurring me into my next life, is because I actually really loved mentoring. Not a lot of people love it, but there was a lot of hand-holding. And I would say that whenever I talk to any other entrepreneurs and I talk to anybody else in a C-suite position, they always say the challenge is dealing with lots and lots of people.
Thank you so much for your presentation. I'm going to get a picture of you before you step off stage. Step down here. Step off stage here and face me. I'm going to get a photo of you. Esteban here is doing a sweet video. Next week, we have a very longtime friend of Friday Coffee Meetup, Jennifer Chang. She runs a group called Tech Stars, Tech Sparks. And she has been involved in the startup community for a very long time. And she recently took a gap year, something that Shauna just talked about, something that some of us wish we could do, some of us have done. But she's going to talk about her gap year, and she's in the middle of it, actually. So she exited her last startup, and now she's been traveling the world. She's going to talk about, I think it's called Eat, Pray, Shop or something like that. Eat, Pray, Startup is the title of her presentation. So I'm very excited to have Jennifer, so I hope you come next week.